ध्यायामोदबलावगुण्डनवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्टिकीं स्निग्धापाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गीं मधुसिक्तसूक्तिम् अमृतानन्दात्मिकमीश्वरीम्। So for a few days, like, we'll just take a gap from Yoga Vasishtha. So we'll see another small work of Shankara, which an article can be found in vedantatattva.org under article section. So this is a five shloka work called Advaita Pancharatnam. So it is a very brief work. It is just a five shloka work, and it is an anusandhanam work. It is a work that can be used to used for contemplation, used for repetition, used for keeping things in mind. Or it will help us a lot if we are able to remember the concepts explained in this particular brief work. So such small works are kind of very important. Very important in that they may not explain a lot of concepts. So conceptually they won't have much, but they will have like a strong power in them, because like they are we can say blunt truth. So there is no logic. So there is nothing given as to okay why Advaita is right. Okay, what is the logic to prove Advaita? What are the various analysis that can be done to prove that this world is an illusion? None of that will come up. So none of those will kind of come up in such anusandhanam work, because here the goal is to contemplate. The goal is to keep Brahman directly in mind. Constant contemplation is the one and only purpose of such works, such short works, very short works. So most of the logical works will have a lot of shlokas, will be a bit vast, rather than these contemplative works, which are very short, which are very crisp and to the point. They don't explain as to what is, why something is so and so, why something is like not so and so, and all those. They will just give concepts. So such works are not very suited for people like who still doubt as to what is real, what is right, what is wrong. So people who don't know as to which philosophy is right, people who don't know whether they want to follow Vedanta or they want to follow some other system or they want to follow like some other spiritual master. So people who don't know the goal of life to be realization of Brahman through Vedantic knowledge, they will not benefit much out of this work, because doubts will still be there. So, but for us it's not the case, because we already know, as to what is real and like what is to be sought out. We know that very well. So since we know as to like what is to be sought out, what is real, there may be some doubts, like we may falter in our at experiential plane, like we may forget, though we know that this is true, that is true, still we may forget it. Forgetting is kind of okay. Doubting is not apt. So when we are driving in a highway and we have to take a particular exit, so if we don't take that exit, still fine. As long as we know that this is the exit that I have to take, then like we can anyway like take a U-turn or somehow like get back. But if we doubt the fact that this particular exit will lead us to the destination, even though we may miss, even though we may take, will not really benefit out of it, because that doubt will linger in our mind. And the more and more, okay, in some cases we may take that exit and we may reach the goal, but chances are it's always a probability of 50%. Blind probability of 50%, literally speaking, it is 50% probable. But that is not the case here. In Vedanta, it's all about like believing. As long as that belief is not there, then the goal will never be achieved, because the goal is oneself. The goal is our very nature. We are already that goal. So only belief that, okay, Vedanta will show me my nature, can give us anandam, can take us to the goal. So nothing else can. So it is kind of very important in Vedanta to have belief. And for many sadhakas, many seekers start learning a lot of works. So learning will go on, like many scriptural works, many advanced works. So advanced works, a lot of logical works like Advaita Siddhi and others. So such logic will kind of help us initially, but such logic will not give us experience. Experience means not external experience, but intuitive experience. If we need to get an experience of anandam that is there inside us, so like if that has to happen, that's kind of very rare for that to happen. Very rarely people get that. But if at least we have to get a glimpse of that bliss, that goal, then we need to have these contemplative works. We need to keep contemplative works in our mind. We have to do contemplation. Contemplation or nididhyasanam is the one and only way that so that is the one and the only way which can make us experience anandam, take us to the goal, not just like just give a beta version of the goal and then vanish. So that way it isn't happiness like which stays forever. That can be gained only through contemplation. So therefore contemplative works are important for sadhakas like us. So we have to remember these shlokas, or at least the concept in these shlokas, and try to go over it over and over again. So anyway, so this is a work, Advaita Pancharatnam. So Advaita Pancharatnam. The Pancharatnam means like it is a jewel. So this is like, this work is a jewel of Advaita. So in this work also, in the second shloka and the first shloka as well, Shankara gives some logic and all. So there are logics to prove a lot of things, like Jagan Mithyatvam logic is also there. He gives logic as well in this work, but the logic is not very exhaustive. And the logic is put in such a way that like it is very easy for us to remember, very easy for us to contemplate. So the logic is not like Advaita Makaranda, where the logic is given. It is all logic, like logic and progressive logic is put forth as to why this is happening, why A is B. And then like, then why did we come to that conclusion, and then raising doubts and answering it. So constant logic that is not there. Here though logic is used a little bit, it is just telling that, okay, this is the way. Don't even doubt, this is the way. So such contemplative works. And also like, since this work has a bit of logic, it is a rarer work. So we learned Maya Panchakam. So Maya Panchakam is a work like which defines Maya. But it doesn't have that much logic and all. It is just and defining Maya, definition or characteristic of Maya, what will Maya do us. Whereas here, Shankara tries to prove or prove successfully that what is Brahman, and that proving, while trying to prove, he also gives us a very powerful contemplative like way to progress towards that truth. Not just have that truth in the mind or in the intellect, but so that like we can experience the truth intuitively. So Advaita Pancharatnam, obviously as the title says, it is about Advaita. So we have a lot of means, lot of things in the world, lot of ways to achieve any goal. So any goal, if we want to create like coffee, so we have like n number of ways to create coffee. There is hot coffee, cold coffee. So go to a Starbucks, we will get like an n number of categories. Go to another shop, then like a Seattle coffee or some other shop, then we will have yet another set. So there are many ways to create things or achieve goals in life. That is because life means like the world. The world is infinite, so we know the world is infinite. So science also says, like, we are in the Milky Way. Our galaxy is called Milky Way. So there are millions of galaxies, like, we don't even know what all they are. So there are millions of galaxies. So, like, since there are millions of galaxies or infinite infinite objects are there, possibilities are also infinite in order to achieve any goal. But the one question that, like, a sadhaka should ask himself or herself is that, can those goals give us eternal bliss? Can those goals fulfill our life? So fulfillment of life means like a state, like, where we are able to say, I am happy, I am blissful. Okay, I am very happy, I don't have anything to gain now. I am content with my own life. So are we able to say that? Are we able to say that, like, oh, I am not affected by whatever is happening in the external world. I am not affected by whatever is happening to my own body. I am not affected to, like, how things are shaping up in the external world, shaping up in my own life, my personal life, my professional life. What is happening with respect to my relatives, friends. So irrespective of any of those, I am able to remain happy. I am able to remain blissful. So that is the goal. And that goal cannot be attained through the world that we currently experience. So the reason that cannot be attained is that the world is sorrowful. And why is the world sorrowful? The world is sorrowful because the world is temporary. So the world is temporary means like the world is constantly changing. Look at the world that we experience now, things are changing. So climate is changing. Climatic conditions are changing. The economy has changed. The economy changed. Like, the economy was progressing quite a lot. There was a boom in the economy and then all of a sudden it went down. Software industry, like, had a boom initially, and then early 90s, and then, like, it went down, and then now it's up. Technological advancements are happening, and like, all of a sudden, like, 9/11 will come and everything will go down. Technological advancement or security, insecurity technology is kind of used a lot today. But security, like, technology had helped security quite a lot until the failed bomb attacks or attempts, like, to be perfect. So failed bomb attempts have proven that, like, it is down again. So security has become more tougher. So things are, like, kind of like, everything is changing. Things happen, like, the good happen, bad happen. So that is where the world is filled with, like, good and bad. Good and bad here just means happiness and sorrow. So we experience happiness and sorrow constantly, or from this world or in this world. When we look at the world that we experience, since it is constantly changing, therefore we are never content with it. So we can take a survey. If we take a survey of how many people in this world are content with what they have, there will be very few people. And like those people, like, who say they are content now, maybe they are content now because they are, like, if you go and ask Obama, like, is he content? The greatest person in the world, the greatest or the strongest person in the world. Why? President of the United States, is he happy? Definitely no. The healthcare plan is not getting, is not being passed. So he's not happy with what is happening. That is fine. What about social service people? Go and ask American Cross, Red Cross, or American Red Cross, whether they are happy with whatever has been done in Haiti. Definitely the answer will be no. We have to do more. More. Where this more will end? There is no end to more. There is no end to all this. So that means, like, though, like, we have, like, different kinds of people in the world, different possessions, different pleasures, but still people are not happy. Nobody is happy. And those people who say they are happy and content now, tomorrow they lose their job, will they be content? Definitely they won't be content. So one small change, one minor change in their life, like one very small change in their life is enough to take their very state from a happy state to sorrowful state, and their contentment will immediately vanish. So this proves that the world that we experience is, since it is constantly changing, therefore there is no happiness at all. So it is in Newton's law of inertia, like everything, like but people don't like changes. Change is not something not just people like, even world itself doesn't like change. That is why it's called inertia. So even the insentient world also doesn't like changes. So, but that is the very nature of the world. So this is something like that a sadhaka has to keep in mind even before getting into Vedanta. The first thing, like in or in Vedanta, the first thing a sadhaka has to remember is the world is temporary and therefore sorrowful. Put in Krishna's word, anityam asukam lokam. This lokam, this world is anityam. Anityam means temporary. Asukam. Asukam means sorrowful. So this is something like that we have to repeat again and again in our mind. Because until this becomes clear. So why I said that, like Vedanta emphasizes a lot on Jagan Mithyatvam, or the world being an illusion. So the reason is, as long as we don't consider this world as an illusion or as sorrowful, we will not seek Brahman or that which is blissful. The world, any wise person who analyzes this world will have to come to the conclusion that this world is sorrowful. There cannot be any other conclusion. The world is sorrowful. There is nobody can say anything against it. So even like the philosophies which say duality is real, and like Dvaita and Vishishta Dvaita, they also have to accept that the world is sorrowful, because that is the very nature of the world. Western philosophy, any philosophy, it doesn't matter like what philosophy we follow. Whether we follow the philosophy of like I have to serve the people of the world, doesn't matter whether you serve the people of the world or not. Whether you do social service, whether you do spiritual service, whether you do worldly service, it doesn't matter what activity a person does. It doesn't matter what we think about the world. The truth is, the world is temporary and sorrowful. Nobody can prove against this truth that is preached in the Bhagavad Gita. So, like people who say that like Amma says you should help others, you should serve others and all, are completely wrong. The reason why Amma tells that we should serve others is because others are also us only. It's very our very nature. We'll come to that. So this world is temporary means like it is pervaded with the non-changing eternal entity of Brahman. And that Brahman, like is our own very nature. So we seeing ourselves in others, we should help others. And not like just helping others just for the sake of helping. No, that is not the goal. That is not the purpose. That is not the purpose of Vedanta. That's not what any spiritual master would preach. So anyway, this world is temporary and sorrowful. So if this world is temporary and sorrowful, there should be a permanent entity, permanent substratum, which is or based on which this world changes. The changing world obviously requires a changeless substratum. So we say earth revolves or rotates, whichever is the right word. I think revolution. Earth revolves around the sun. So how do we say like earth revolves around the sun? So we say the earth revolves around the sun by saying that the sun is the focal point. Sun is the center of this Milky Way. But we know sun is also moving. Like when we consider sun is also moving, like we cannot say earth revolves around the sun. Like if the sun also revolves around something else. Like if this constant change, like it will be a chain of constant changes is like two people who are balancing on a rope, or five people balancing on a rope. So one person is about to fall, so he holds on to the other person. The second person falls because he holds on to the third person. The third person is about to fall, so he holds on to the fourth person. The fourth person is about to fall, therefore he holds on to the fifth person. Where will the fifth person hold on to? Oh, okay, the fifth person holds on to the first person. That is how the world is. Means like everybody is interdependent, like parents depend on their children, children depend on parents, companies or offices depend on customers. Obviously, customers themselves are part of some other office. It goes on, like people from Microsoft sell to people in, let's say, Walmart. And what will happen, like Walmart people like buy from Microsoft, that is what is the meaning. And then Microsoft people buy from Walmart shops. That means it is an interlink. So it's a web. So this web means like interdependency. Wherever there is such interdependency, who is content? Nobody is content. So this interdependency means nobody will be content. Only a person like who is independent and says, okay, I am standing, I am balancing myself, will be happy. Else what will happen? Like, oh, you didn't, the five people, like you didn't balance properly, therefore I am like shaking. Who will like remain steady? Nobody can, like, because they are dependent on the next two person. The next person is dependent on the other person. This interdependent, like this is why the economy went down. Why? Because it's based on stock markets. Stock market means it's based on all this. It is like we think stock market, stocks are like something great. Stocks are nothing great. Stocks are as good as people like who are chit funds in India. So chit funds and all like will fail some or the other day, because it is from here and there, give from here, ek haath se dena, dusre haath se lena. This will, everybody is doing this. At least like one person who has some money, treasure, if from that person everybody takes, then it's okay. But this is not the case. It is interdependent, like a circle. A borrows from B, B borrows from C, C borrows from A. What will happen? Nobody will be happy. So it is like moving here and there. The bank, the very way banks work is that only. The banks, like if, let's say like in a bank, like if the main stakeholders or people like who have put a lot of money in the bank, they withdraw in one day, then what will happen? The bank will have to like file for bankruptcy, because that is how it works. Like you donate some money, your money is there. Your money will be put for 10 other people, and like it will be rotated, something is the word that is used for it. So it will be like sent here and there. So interdependent, like wherever such interdependencies are there, there will never be any kind of happiness. Happiness cannot be there in such interdependent situations. So which means that this world, which is like interdependent, like it is something like temporary, means interdependent objects together. So that cannot give us any happiness. Such interdependent entities themselves are based on something which is independent. Without an independent entity, there cannot be interdependencies. Interdependencies or a temporary entity cannot exist. We say the earth revolves based on the sun remaining steady. So like when we want to solve an equation, or when we want to find out the way out, or find out the composition of an entity. So let's say we say hydrogen plus oxygen is water. Hydrogen plus oxygen is never water. We say under these conditions, the temperature should be so and so. Like water is liquid. Can we say water is liquid? You can't say. Today we know. Like go out like anywhere in the United States, you can see only ice everywhere. And the ice in the morning, the ice becomes snow. It sometimes melts. It goes from here and there. The water is liquid. We can't say water is liquid. water is liquid at a particular temperature. Assuming that the temperature is so and so, which means considering temperature to be steady, water is liquid. So, there should be an independent entity behind the temporary world that we are currently experiencing. So, that independent entity is what Vedanta calls as Brahman. And that independent entity cannot depend on anything else, because if there are dependencies, if it is dependent on something else, then there will be, it will become like the world, temporary and sorrowful. Therefore, this independent entity is Advaitam. Advaitam means there is no two-ness there. So, two-ness, when there are two, when there are like two people in the house, one person will depend on the other naturally. Even if it's parents and children, it doesn't matter whether it's parents and children, friends, they will depend on each other. So, wherever two-ness comes, there is dependency, there will always be dependency. Therefore, Brahman is independent, therefore it is Advaitam. So, Advaitam means there is no duality, there is no two-ness that alone exists. The Shastras preach in many ways about this non-dual entity through saying that, okay, Sadeva Saumedam Agre Asit Ekameva Advitiyam. Before creation, only Brahman existed and it was like one without a second. So there was no duality in such an entity. So that independent entity, since it is independent, therefore it's not temporary, which means it is eternal. So since it is eternal, it is blissful. So that which is temporary constantly changes, therefore it is sorrowful. So since Brahman is independent, therefore it is blissful. So blissful means like it's a state like where we experience only happiness. There is no tainting of sorrow or tainting by sorrow. Sorrow doesn't taint a person. That is the state of bliss. And this bliss is not at all experienced by like us in the waking state. But a glimpse of that bliss is experienced during deep sleep. So when we independent entity, that which is independent is blissful, and such a bliss like we kind of experience, we also experience in the deep sleep state. So this brings us to like the three states that we experience in a day. So we experience the waking state. The waking state means the state that we are now. We experience gross external objects, objects as external, objects are gross. And like there is a state like when we go to sleep, we experience a dream state. A dream state means it is a subtle state, but it is very similar to the waking world. So in waking world, like we see many entities. In dream world also we see many entities. The only difference is the dream world is like in the dreamer. Now the waking world is like doesn't seem to be in the waker. And there is a third state. The third state is when we are sleeping, we don't have any dream. So that is a state like when we sleep, when we close our eyes, we sleep, immediately open up and we realize that 5 hours have passed by. And we say like, oh, 5 hours passed by? I didn't even know. I was like, but I slept very happily. I was very blissful. I slept blissfully, but I didn't know what happened. So that bliss that we experience in deep sleep, that is something like which runs our life. So our life runs based on that deep sleep. Sleep. Generally we say like sleep is essential for living. It's not sleep. Imagine a state like where we dream constantly in sleep. Yeah, if we dream constantly in sleep, like dream is also this waking world. So in dream also there are duality, dependencies, which means it is changing, which means sorrowful. So if we dream, like maybe like today, like we may dream that like we won a lottery and we became the next Bill Gates. But like that is rare. So the next day, what will happen? Next day, like we dream that like our lottery like automatically vanishes. Like somebody, because some thief or robbers come into our house, they take away our money or lottery ticket, then everything vanishes. So that means there also it is the same as the waking state. So we will not be happy, like we will not have any relaxation. But in the deep sleep state, since when we go to sleep, we also experience deep sleep state, there we are able to experience happiness. The happiness or bliss. Bliss means along with peace. Bliss means peace, contentment, satisfaction. All those go hand in hand with bliss. So we experience bliss, and bliss, whenever we experience bliss, it is a relaxation. So bliss means it is like without any tensions. Tensionless state is the state of bliss. So that we do experience in deep sleep state, and that is the very nature of Brahman. So speaking of this like bliss, many people like will say, oh, Paramartha's discourse so good. So you know, yesterday like I went for this program, this Bhagavatam discourse, and it was so good. Okay, wait, was it so good? Like then, like if it is so good, like what did you learn from it? I learned like from it like that. From Bhagavatam, I learned that like Ajamila, I have to fall down in order for me to be rescued by the Lord. Ajamila like fell down. There, like he forgot Ishvara, he forgot his Dharma. And later he remembered, and therefore he was saved. So if I have to like be saved, first I'll have to fall down. That is how our knowledge will be. One, first of all, that is how our knowledge is. And then immediately after coming from Bhagavatam discourse, we'll say, oh, Bhagavatam was superb, you know. Like by the way, like is the payasam ready? I told you, right? Like it is Bhagavatam. So after Bhagavatam, payasam is something which is very essential. So that is how it will be. So this means that like there is no bliss there. There is no bliss experience. Just by like as we learnt in Maya Panchakam, a person like who can give lot of discourses, not just listen to scriptural statements or remember scriptural statements, but analyze scriptural statements, give scriptural preaching or teaching, even such people fall a prey to Maya. They fall a prey to Maya. Why? Because though they learn scriptures, they forget to remember Brahman, which is the focus of the scriptures. Scriptures focus on Brahman. Scriptures, like the main subject matter of scriptures is truth. Truth or anandam. Scriptures are those which fulfill us. Fulfill us means fulfill our life. Fulfillment of life is only possible through anandam, because that is the goal of life. That is the true goal of life. Even a person like who wants to become the new president of the world or the United States, even a person like who wants to become the richest person in the world, a person like who wants to lead a very happy life, happy married life, happy professional life, all those people, they also, what they seek? They seek anandam only. So it is anandam, it is bliss, untainted by sorrow. Lack of sorrow, there is no sorrow. I don't have any sorrow. I am blissful. I am happy. This happiness stays forever. That is the state. That is the state which we all are seeking. So some people like knowingly seek it. Some people forget, knowingly don't seek it, but like they kind of get a glimpse of it. So some people like unknowingly like seek, unknowingly like one fine day a person will be walking, and immediately they will see like a poster of Amma. Immediately they think like, well, let me see Amma. So they don't know that they are seeking happiness, but they find Amma, and they find Amma like something that attracts them. Something in Amma that attracts them, they go to Amma, they meet Amma, a transformation happens, they learn Vedanta and then realize immediately. So that means immediately or after some time. So they unknowingly seek, or like they don't know that they are seeking happiness, but still they somehow get to happiness. Such people are also there. But Whether we know or not, irrespective of whether we know or not, everybody is seeking happiness only. We seek happiness through power, through money, through many other ways, many other things. So we, that is because we think they all can give us happiness. So we think that they all will give us happiness, but they don't. They all don't give us happiness. They all can't give us happiness. So none of them, like anything from the world. The world is anityam asukam. So since the world is anityam asukam, so that world which is anityam asukam, how can it give us happiness? That cannot give us happiness at all. That's why the shastras like Gita and others again and again repeat that yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yona yevate adhyanta vanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddhaha. So this world, like this world which is composed of objects, sense objects that would come in contact to our sense organs, like what we perceive through our eyes, hear through our ears, touch, and all those, like whatever we do, whatever happens, that all those like are have a beginning and an end. So it is the world which is changing. So that world which is changing, like changing means like it will finally die. That which changes will finally end up in death. So that means it is subject to birth and death. Anything that is temporary is subject to birth and death. So that which is taking birth and dies, at the end it won't be there. So that which dies, like which doesn't exist at the end, how can it give us happiness? It cannot give us any happiness. It won't give us any happiness. So it will not give us happiness. So, like any sensual pleasures which we get from external world are seeds of sorrow. So they are seeds of sorrow because they have a beginning and an end. So there is a beginning for them, there is an end for them. Therefore, they cannot give us any happiness. They cannot give us any bliss. So that is what the shastras repeat over and over again. So this, if we know this, then we will know that the external world cannot give us any happiness, but still majority of people think they will give happiness, and therefore they run behind worldly objects only to end up in sorrow. So this is like a person running behind water in desert. The person thinks like there is water in desert. So since the water is there, like he sees water and he is thirsty, he runs behind it. So when he runs behind it, he has all hopes. He has hopes that like he will experience water, his thirst will get quenched. But unfortunately for him, that doesn't really happen because there is no water at all. So therefore what happens is he ends up not getting water and thereby becomes very sad. So that is a state like the world is currently in. So the world is in that state. Like anybody whom we see in the world, they are all they are all suffering. They are all like very sorry. Yeah, they are all very sorry that they can't get any happiness. As much as they strive, as much as they are trying to get happiness, they don't get any happiness at all. So that is like a truth which Vedanta repeats over and over again. So the world is temporary, the world is sorrowful. Therefore, seek the substratum of the world, which is Brahman, which is blissful. Okay, blissful Brahman, and like we do, can there be anything called blissful? Can there be anything which is blissful? Only there are, like, we only know about this world. Since we know only about this world, therefore, since like we only know that the world that is not blissful, therefore we can say there is nothing called blissful. Everything is balanced, you know. Everything is balanced. Happiness, sorrow, all those are balanced. So balance, like anybody like who knows Einstein's relativity theory will say like balance is fine. So such relativity or such relative, like happiness and sorrow are like the two sides of a coin or the two plates of a balance. Any people who say that, they will also have to acknowledge that there is an absolute based on which this relativity exists. This, as we said, like the sun. Assuming the sun to be stationary, we say this Milky Way is there. If the sun is sun itself is changing, then how can we say like there is any how can we say that this Milky Way will remain like this and like that? That is why, like today, geologists and others, like they think that like this world will remain like this, but it doesn't remain because it cannot remain because it's all interdependent entities. So like it cannot exist. Relativity or two such balance, such dual notions like happiness and sorrow cannot exist without a non-dual, independent base. Absolute base, so that absolute base is Brahman, that absolute base is blissful. Whether we accept it, whether we acknowledge it or not, such an entity does really exist. So much for like Vedanta's emphasis that such an entity exists. But Vedanta, being very compassionate, doesn't stop there. Okay, fine, such a blissful entity exists, but then what? Why should I really care about it? You should care about it. One, because you are seeking happiness. Since you are seeking happiness, and happiness can only be attained through this entity, therefore it is important. And the second is, such an entity of Brahman, if we don't seek such an entity of Brahman, then we are to be considered fools. We are to be considered idiots. Fool, does Krishna use such words? Obviously, avajananti ma moodaha. In many places, Krishna uses the word mooda. Mooda means like a fool. So that is the maximum Krishna can get to, else Krishna would say like more mean words. Of course, he is the compassionate Lord, compassionate Guru, Jagat Guru. Therefore, he cannot make any meaner or worse statement. But he goes to that extent. So why are we to be considered fools if we don't seek that bliss? Because that bliss is our very nature. Advaitam means non-dual. So non-dual means only one exists. So that one entity of Brahman, like let's keep that one entity of Brahman as such. Let's try to analyze like our very nature, who are we? So when we try to like, so this is the two way of analysis. In Vedanta, analysis always is like with respect to two perspectives. So, two perspectives are two ways. One is called the big way, and the second is called the individual way. Macrocosm, microcosm. So, samashti is the word. Samashti means totality. Vyashti means individuality or one entity. So, with respect to the world, we can say the world has a substratum of Brahman. And that, the whatever is there in the world, that is also there inside us. So when we say earth, when we say water, when we say fire, space or sky, all those are there in the body as well. So we know Mooladharam, earth is there. Swadhisthanam, fire is there. And all those like a little more, like we can go to those chakras. So whatever is there in the external world, that is there inside as well. So sun and moon. Oh, sun and moon are only there in the external world, not in me. Okay, sun and moon are the two eyes. They are the eyes. The eyes that we have are sun and moon. So everything is inside us as well. So whatever is there, the storm, winter storm, snow storm, rain storm, all those are not there in the body. Obviously, they are there. What is a snow storm or like a rain storm? Rain storm means gold. Heat storm, the body becoming very hot, like what is that? Fever. So whatever is there in the external world, that is there inside as well. So in this, with respect to this individuality also, there should be some independent entity and dependent entity. So dependent entity means this body that we experience, the body, the sense organs means like whatever we used to see, whatever we used to hear. So seeing, hearing, eyes, ears, nose and all those. And whatever limbs, like whatever body parts that we have. And the mind, the thinking mind, the determining intellect, the memory, like memory, our memory, like we store a lot of things in the memory, and then the ego which says like, I am so and so, my name is so and so, I am working here, I am doing this, I am doing that. So all these are interdependent. The ego is dependent on the body, obviously, like ego depends on the body and external possessions. The ego says, I possess this, I am wearing this, this is my friend. So the ego is always with respect to objects, so which means that those are all like objects. How do we experience objects? Objects are experienced through the sense organs. So that means the ego is related to the sense organ, dependent on the sense organ for objects and based on which it exists. So it is kind of interdependent, everything is interdependent. So, and they are changing as well, the ego changes. The ego 10 years back, the ego said, the ego used to say like, I am in college. And today the ego says, I am working. Tomorrow the ego may say like, I have to wear specs. After 20 years or 30 years, the ego will say, I am a middle-aged person. After 50 years, the ego will say, I am old now. I can't see properly. All those will be there. So the ego also constantly changes. So all these changes also require a changeless substratum. So that changeless substratum is what we call as I or Atman. So Atman is the word that is used for the changeless substratum inside us. Also termed in English as self, in Sanskrit Atman. So this I or Atman is changeless. If we try to think about like the ego, like ego is always associated with objects, with the body. With respect to the body, I say I am 20 years old. But I who was born 20 years back am 20 years old. So there was an I when I took birth, and there was an I like which is now, which says 20 years. So what is the link between both? I was there, I am here. Then what is different? The ego like says, I am so and so. The ego changes. The changing ego gets superimposed on this I, which is steady. So this I says, this body is there, this mind is there, this eyes are there, these objects are there. So this changeless I, which remains changeless from the day of birth till the day of death, whatever happens in between, that changeless entity is one with Brahman. So that changeless entity is one with Brahman. How? We already said, like if it is there from one day one till day the end day or D day of our life, which it means that it is changeless. Oh, it like after death it vanishes. And that which doesn't change, like when we have a birth or when we have this life, that which doesn't change for 100 years, how can we say it will change after 100 years? That which says stays changeless for 100 years, like it is, we can definitely conclude that it won't change after 100 years as well. So it is something like which is kind of very easy to understand, very easy to keep in mind. That the world, like that, the world that, oh sorry, that the body, sorry, the ego, I'm sorry, that the I which doesn't change for these 100 years, will definitely not change after 100 years as well. It will not change like after 100 years also. This means that it is changeless. Like Brahman, it is also changeless. So this I, this self-I is also changeless like Brahman. And okay, changeless is fine. Is it independent? Obviously, if it is changeless, it has to be independent. We said like that which is dependent will constantly change. So dependent means constantly change. This ego is independent. Independent means it never changes. And like, is it blissful? Okay, changeless is fine. Independent is fine. Is it blissful? Definitely it is blissful. So how do we know that this I is blissful? This I is blissful as experience, as we said like previously, in the state of deep sleep. So when we go to bed, when we don't dream, when we are like in the state of deep sleep, like we experience a bliss. So in that deep sleep state, there is no ego. So how do we know there is no ego in deep sleep state? We know there is no ego in deep sleep state because if the ego is there, it will say, I am so and so. I am so and so. Such association, such kind of ownership is the quality of the ego, and that isn't there in deep sleep. So therefore, we can definitely say that ego doesn't exist, and only the self exists during that state. So this means like why should we seek Brahman? Why should we realize Brahman? If we don't realize Brahman, we are fools, we are idiots, because Brahman is our very nature. So we are Brahman. What would we call a person like who doesn't know his own very nature, his own very name? We call such people in the world as mad people. So mad people, people who are mad, means like people who don't know their own very nature. So people who don't know their very nature of Brahman, that Brahman is, okay, I am Brahman. So people who don't know I am Brahman, they are fools, because they don't know that they are Brahman. And not just that they don't know they are Brahman, but also that as a result of that, they don't experience any happiness as well. So happiness is their very nature. So the very nature being happiness, still they don't experience any happiness. So therefore, it is, they are fools, they are idiots. Therefore, it is very important, so very essential that a person seeks Brahman, so that he or she can not just experience their very nature of Brahman, they can also rejoice in bliss. So that is the purpose of Vedanta. Vedantic learning should take us to a state where we are able to say, I am Brahman, my very nature is Brahman, I am blissful, this world is an illusion, I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not the ego, I am a non-changing, eternal, blissful Brahman. So that is the goal of Vedanta. So such works like Advaita Pancharatnam will constantly focus on our very nature being Brahman, so that the more and more we contemplate, the more we will be able to get out of the wrong notions that I am this body, I am the ego, I am the sense organs, like I am so and so, I am part of this world. So all those wrong notions will vanish. So when all those wrong notions vanish, we will be able to experience immense bliss. And since bliss is the goal of our life, our life can be fulfilled only by experiencing or rejoicing in bliss, and bliss can only be known through realizing Brahman, and Brahman can be realized only through Vedanta. Therefore, it is very essential for us to learn Vedanta, but not learn Vedanta because it is highly logical, because it has it has a lot of good concept, because it is a means of livelihood. Tomorrow, if we lose our job, we can put up a stall, put up an ashram at our home, and say, okay, people who come, I'll preach Vedanta, give me money, every session $10, $100. No offense to people who do that. There are people who ask money for their discourses. There are people like that, that's all up to them. Things are there. We can't really create rules. So that is we can't start attacking people who ask money for discourses, but that shouldn't be the goal. That shouldn't be the goal. If that shouldn't be the goal, we should remember that realizing Brahman through contemplation of Brahman is the goal, is the purpose of learning Vedanta. And when we do that, as Shankara says, Yogaratova, Bogaratova, Sangaratova, Sangavihinaha, Esya Brahmani Ramate Chittam, Nandati Nandati Nandatyeva. A person who is able to remember his very nature of Brahman, though he may do yogam, bogam, he may be in a cold area, he may be in a warm area, he may be happy externally, he may be sad externally, he may have a job, not have a job, He may have a bank balance and he may not have a bank balance. Irrespective of whatever he is doing externally, he will be able to remain very blissful. And such blissful state is the goal, and that will be experience that will be realized through contemplation on Brahman, which is served which we can experience, which can very easily get through learning of this work of Advaita Pancharatna. So we will start with the work in the next day, but like may Amma bless us so that we may be able to rejoice in bliss, and may our lives get fulfilled by contemplation on Brahman through learning of this beautiful work of Shankara. We'll continue on the next day. Namaskar. Thank you.